Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
I'm kind of laughing even as I know the guest I'm bringing on today. So I consider myself kind of funny. And at my shows, people say that if I ever give up singing, I could be a comedian. And I thought, God, I don't think I could ever do that, even though I do it at my shows and at the expense of sometimes family and friends, and I feel bad about that, but it gets good laughs. And then the nights that it doesn't, I'm like, man, I'm glad I'm a singer. But I always was curious how people pursue that career and what it's like. And so I think it was last week or the week before, I was having kind of it was just a really long, stressful day. And sometimes I tune into easy, Hallmark movies and different things like that. And I happened to be just searching through Netflix, and I bumped into this one movie. I can't even really tell you what it was called. But all of a sudden I see this person on the screen and I know him, and I'm like, are you kidding me? And then I'm thinking I'm dreaming, and he is so funny in this movie. And so I waited for the credits, and sure enough, it was him. And so I do what any normal person would do. I sent him a Facebook message and said, hey, be on my radio show. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I am introducing you to a very, very talented and funny comedian and musician and producer, Mr. J. Chris Newberg. How are you today?
Hey, Joe, how are you? I'm good. I'm awake.
I know. Okay, so he's calling from California, everybody. And so it's a 3-hour difference, and I can't even imagine you being up right now. But I really appreciate it, and I hope you're just laying in bed talking to me. Not that I'm picturing that, but I'm just telling you that. No. I hope that's the situation. So you are a native from Michigan. Is that correct?
Birmingham, born and raised.
There you go.
Beaumont Hospital, the whole thing.
There you go. So I'm just going to ask the corniest cliche questions because I am curious. I know you were a musician, very talented musician, songwriter. And what caused you to choose the path that you are on now?
Comedy versus music?
Yeah.
I think I was better at comedy. Music is, I don't know. It's just definitely the route that I took with music was the one of a band. So you have to get 5 people thinking the same thing. Mm-hmm. And, for a long period of time. And when you want to go a certain way, it genuinely, the experience I've had pretty much does become the storyline for the movie or for the song Summer of 69 with Jimmy Quit, Joey Got Married. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have the one single mind's eye with all 5 people. So I was just like, you know what? I quit and I'm going to do something else. And then maybe 2 weeks went by. I started getting jittery to play again. And I was like, well, I don't want to lug amps and I don't want to start a band and all this other stuff. So I just literally took a shot at comedy. And it was interesting, within 1 year of quitting the band, I remember I got a chance to play Meadowbrook, and it was sold out. It was
just
me up on stage. I mean, I wasn't headlining. I was opening for the amazing Jonathan, but it was a year to the day that I quit. Mm. And the band that I quit was a great band, but they were up north playing in Traverse City doing covers, and I was at Meadowbrook. So I think I made the right decision.
No doubt. And let me talk about that, because it's kind of what my radio show is about. It's about going, with your gut, about, facing the fears of, hey, is this going to work or not? And obviously, in that moment, I'm on the stage at Meadowbrook, you're like, yep, I did it. But was there ever any fear with it? Was there ever any doubt with it? And just as the years go on, is it hard? I know as a musician, I've been in it for 30 years now, and there are going to be great moments, and then there's going to be the hills and valleys and the things you have to go through. What is it like in the comedian world? It seems to me like it's hard. Is it hard?
Is comedy hard? I mean, yeah, I guess so. It depends on, the creative aspect isn't very difficult. The the lifestyle is no different. You know, like if you want to talk about like comparable road, you know, you've been on the road yourself, and it's like with a band, you're with 5, 6, 7 people, as much as it's not the funnest traveling situation as far as like, you know, proximity and everyone's stuffed in a van, it's still really fun because you're with your family and friends and you're bonding in that aspect. And the comedian is pretty much, you know, you Uber to the airport, hop on a plane, Uber to another airport, meet some stranger, jump in a car, go to the hotel, play a show, talk to the people you've just met, and then you have 23 hours until the next thing by yourself to figure it out. So that's harder than the actual creative aspect. I've written comedy so long now that it's like when I start my job, I'll get in there today at 10 o'clock and I'll have to just start writing. You know, like sit down, start. There's no, what's your motivation? If my motivation is 10 a.m. and I have 100 jokes to hit.
Wow. Oh my God. So that's the process. I wonder, because you make it look, you know, I watched your videos a lot in the last couple of days, and you make it look effortless. Like you look like you haven't written it. It looks like it's on the fly, but you really do work at it then, because it sure doesn't. I mean, that's what I love about it. It looks like, you know, you're just like things are just popping in your head and you're going with it, but that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's to some extent it's the case. If I happen to think of something, I'll say it. But, you know, and for the most part, yeah, you just have to, it has to appear like you're enjoying yourself, like you're having fun, and you know, the smoothness. But there's a lot of work. There's a lot of work gone that goes into like not looking like it's difficult.
Right. Well, you've got a handle on that. One thing I really enjoyed, and it was so funny because I'm watching this one video of you and you have an audience member who's like arms are folded. And as a musician, like that just always bugs me, you know, to see mm-hmm. like look like somebody's bored or something like that. And I was like, I wonder if he notices. And right when I thought that, you called her out and it was so funny. And so what do you do in the sense of, I mean, you know, when the energy's weird in the audience, what do you do inside for confidence? Like, all right, I got to get through this. You know, do you play along with the energy, the fact that, you know, maybe people aren't laughing as hard or their attention span seems, you know, short? What do you do for that? Like, what's your process for that?
I mean, for the most part, I guess I have the approach of it's my show. Mm-hmm. They get to see me. I get to do what I want. So it's very rare that I let audience dictate how it is that I'm going to feel or do whatever. I mean, definitely every single audience is a combination lock that you kind of have to figure out, or like a first date that you have to, you know, understand in a very quick period of time. Mm-hmm. Like you're speed dating with like 200 people, you know?
That's awesome. Speed dating.
And so with that in mind, it's just, you have to, like, you know, you can say, oh, it's the audience is messed up, and they don't get it. It's for the most part usually the comedian's fault, like probably 99% of the time. And you just have to figure out what pace you want to take them and how you want to approach. And, you know, it's definitely something that I think the comedian controls 100%.
Very good. All right, so what's your most memorable, and I hate when people ask me these questions, so it's cracking me up that I'm asking you, but what was your most memorable or is your most memorable show that you were like, man, I can't believe I'm here?
Gosh, I've said that. I used to say that so many times, all the time. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing here? How can I can't believe.
What was the first one that you felt that way besides Meadowbrook?
I think the first one was when I did Kimmel. I did Kimmel in 2004.
I remember that. I was freaking out. I couldn't believe it. That's huge.
Yeah, I was freaking out too. I don't remember. I think it went over fine. But it was just, I just was like, whoa, what am I doing here? And then I remember I would always ask that to my last manager. I was like, God, what am I doing here? I can't even believe I'm here. And he was like, you were invited. Shut up. And then I was like, oh, okay. At this point, I guess I need to stop, you know, being wowed by the fact that I'm supposed to be here.
Well, I think that, you know, we have this discussion in my family all the time. When really good things happen in my career, I freak out. And my husband's like, isn't that what you want to happen? I'm like, of course it's what I want to happen. But then all those like demons come in and like almost self-sabotage. Do you have any of that going on? Or are you just like, nope, I'm good. You know, you just don't feel that anymore, you know?
I mean, I think, my gosh, wouldn't it be easy to be demon free? No, I think that I definitely have, you know, things in my brain that attempt to speak with me in a, like, a negative capacity, but I'm so positive just in general. It's pretty hard for that many things to get in my brain. But if I do crash, it's usually for a day, and the process is, oh, I can't do this, I'm terrible, I'm the worst. And then, like, 3 hours later, it's like, am I the worst? And then, like, a few hours later, I'm like, I will kill you. So it's usually pretty short, but it definitely does happen on occasion.
So I know what I do. You know, I consider myself pretty overly optimistic human being, but I do have those dark moments, and then you just shake it off, you know, just like what mm-hmm. you described, and I love that. I do a lot of, like, meditation, yoga, journaling, you know, prayer. Is there anything that you have in your life that you use to decompress?
I usually just kind of, like, I use my podcast. I mean, it's like, that's my, it's usually like, I don't know, half hour a day, probably four times a week. And it's just me talking, and it gives me an opportunity to 1000% have therapy with working everything that I want to work out and just saying it, and it goes out into the universe, and, you know, people listen or they don't. And it's super helpful, because otherwise it's like, you don't really have a, you know, you don't really have a chance to decompress if you're like constantly, you know, focusing on this, the next thing. I guess this is sort of a super long answer, but in addition to that, it's just like, I think also, like, the older you get, the more you look forward to allowing yourself reset opportunities.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yes. And I love that you have a podcast. Where can people find it?
We have podcast is everywhere. People podcast. It's, Carolyn has a great publicist, and it's not at all about drugs. It's about how people do really, really stupid things, despite the fact that we know they're pretty stupid.
So wait, so what's the title? Like, where that's
it's called Carolyn Has a Great Publicist.
Oh, it really is? Okay. Got it. Mm-hmm. All right. We will look that up. What made you go there with the title?
I mean, you're, life observation. It's just like, there's anytime, well, first when I started reading, like, anytime I would read about, like, something in the world of, you know, like heroin, for example, or, like, you know, I don't know, other things that are really, really silly that people do everywhere, like, anyway, I'm always like, how great of a publicist must that have for it to be still going on when it's like a proven killer?
Wow.
I was like, oh, that's a really random name for a podcast. And it, like, I knew that it would stick out, and it would make some people weirded out by the title. So that made me enjoy it even more. But
it is attractive. That's for sure. I mean, it causes curiosity right off the bat. So it was brilliant. Yes.
Thank you.
So what's the difference between, you know, my sister lives in California, and what's the difference between Michigan living and California living for you? What do you like, and what don't you like about it?
I think the speed here is much slower, and it's really hard to get used to, especially if you're like a workaholic person like I am, because mm-hmm. everything's just slow and chill, and work days start at like 10:30, dude. And, like, you know, you go till you're done, and it's like, whereas Michigan, it's like, go, 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 ah! I love that just as much, but here it's definitely not the case.
Wow, I didn't know that. I just figured it's because of the traffic. I had shows out there, and I was like, man, everything took like 2 hours to get anywhere. And yeah. I was like, oh, no, that doesn't work for me. But I did love the sunshine for sure.
You can get around it. I mean, as long as you're not driving during rush hour, you're set.
Yeah. So your life, do you find that you have good balance in your life?
I think so. I mean, I think it's after years of imbalance that we finally figured out. And it's no fun if you figure it out too young, because then you're like, how am I balanced for so long? So I like, you know, there's still a part of me, as balanced as I am, who likes to occasionally snack on crisis. because crisis is always the opportunity. It just brings me material.
I know. I get you. I told my husband when I married him, I'm like, oh my God, stop being nice to me. I have nothing to write about, you know? And it was true. You know, to this day, I'm like, will you make me mad or something? And I had this woman who was like a life coach, and she was like, well, you have to learn to write out of crisis. I'm like, well, I haven't figured that one out yet. I'll work on it, but I'll look at someone else's crisis, I suppose. So so my husband doesn't understand. He loves comedians. He could watch comedians all day long, and he doesn't understand when I don't laugh. And it's not that I don't think it's funny. I'm just a thinker, I think. Mm-hmm. Who is one of your most favorite comedians? I mean, I know who mine are, but who were yours?
Oh, man. I'm a huge Rodney Dangerfield fan.
Nice.
I really like Dave Attell currently. I mean, I really like Dave Chappelle. Obviously, he's funny.
He is so amazing. He is so amazing.
Yeah, he's great. Woody Allen, I like. He's a great. I like people who are like joke people, and Woody Allen was that. And Norman Lear, just a lot of writer people.
Yeah, great writer, incredible writer. Do you ever see yourself? And I don't know if you have it yet, so I apologize if you do. Do you ever see yourself writing a book about what you've done and what you've experienced?
I could see it being a possibility, and something that I think it's still writing itself. So at this point in time, I don't necessarily think it would be, you know, the ideal biography, or autobiography. But at some point, I could see myself sitting down. Why not? There's a lot of words in my brain.
Yeah, right. And you know, you're a writer. So I had a professor, I do some keynote speaking at colleges, and I had a professor challenge me to write 10 to 15 minutes a day. And he said, it doesn't have to be about anything. Like, you just decide, you get, you know, you just start writing and do it. And I found it really freeing. I mean, I journal every day and I talk about, you know, whatever happened. But this writing thing is really cool. And it kind of feels like another outlet, you know, compared to the other stuff that kind of to this point, and this is what I'm going to ask you too. Like for me, 12 albums later, you know, I go to write a song. Then I think, okay, how's this going to work on a record? Like not when I was like a virgin writing, you know, when I first started writing, anything would just come out. Now I'm like, all right, how's this going to look in the bigger picture? And I've kind of lost the freedom. Do you feel that? Or when you go to write in the morning, like you say, you have this process, do you feel more hindered by it, or you're more free because you're more experienced?
I think, I guess probably in a work capacity, more free because of the experience. You just kind of know what to look for. I mean, songwriting and joke writing are almost identical in process. It's like, you know, you need to find the flow, you need to find the proper lyrics, the perfect hook, and then you need to figure out how long it's going to be. And also throughout the song, you're going to have parts that are going to change and develop the same sort of way in a joke. You could have a simple one-liner joke that, you know, compared to like a three-minute pop song or a catchy song, you know, and they're going to be both going to be tight. They're both going to be memorable. They're both going to have a chorus. They're both going to have an opportunity for you to recall all of these different things. And if done correctly, both that song from inception in someone's bedroom to band practice to the stage to eventually record it on an album is going to go through dozens of changes of feel, and like maybe the D part's a little too short, and maybe we get like we take the bass out here and we do all this and other things. It's the same exact thing with a joke when it comes to word inflection, word count, where it's going to go in the set, how you're going to hit it, if you're going to land the last word on an up or a down or a pause, where you're going to do these different things. These are things that you figure out probably, you know, probably just in time that you would put it on a record.
Wow. It's way more intelligent than I thought. Not to be. It's just because you know, as an audience member, you don't think about how much work it goes into, you know, and it's incredible when you tell me this way. It's such a process, and I'm ignorant. I didn't know that. And it's just, I've always had respect for comedians anyway. But even more so to know this in this case. So what was your worst gig, if you can think of it?
My worst gig. Gosh, I think now that without question, so it was probably 20 years ago at this point, maybe a little shorter. But Dave Coulier was unable to do this charity gig at some. It was for I don't know if I remember the organization. I'm not trying to spite the organization, but I want to say that it was called Mira or something.
Okay.
And it was for the charity organization was for adult parents of children who've committed suicide.
Oh man.
So that's the charity. So this, you know, super uplifting as you know, as it starts. And so I was hired to do the gig and I was like, it was more money than I'd ever seen at the time in my life for a gig. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to make $5,000, tell jokes. This is going to be easy. It's black tie. I get there. I dress up. I'm 3 minutes into my gig and these two women come right up to the stage and they start like heckling me in the worst way. They're like, you're horrible. You're unfunny. How dare you? You offended everyone. Get off. You're embarrassing. You're going to ruin this night. And trust me, these people's nights have been ruined many times before.
Oh my
I'm like,
God.
So I'm like, but no one in the audience can hear them. I only see these two women talking to me. So I'm up here going, so I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm done. I get off stage. I'm like, damn it, I'm not getting paid, nothing. I get off stage, and this guy comes up to me, and he goes, what are you doing? And I'm like, I got off stage. They told me to get off stage. He goes, who? Who did? And I go, those two women. He goes, what women? And I'm like, I don't know. They said these, she's like, get back up there. So I'm like, okay. So I got back up there. And immediately they showed up again. They were swearing at me. They started pounding the floor.
These horrible
so
people.
Eventually, and I said, but I kept going for like 15 minutes. And it's like, it's uncomfortable for everyone. I'm not landing any jokes. And then I came back. I'm like, I guess I'm not the person for this gig. And I walked off stage and the guy comes up again. And he's like, what are you doing? Get back up there. You got to go. And I'm like, no. And it was like, I ended up actually like finishing going back up there one more time. I came in, I got off stage, I got the check, went and sat in my car, and I cried for like 30 minutes.
Oh, man.
Because it was just so bad.
That is horrible. And those people, ugh, it is the worst.
Yeah.
It's so easy. It's like, you know, armchair quarterback, and they sit there and say things like that to you. It's like, you get your ass up here and figure out how easy this would be. But if that isn't a scene from a movie, I don't know what is. You've got to do that at some point. Like, that is an incredible story. And this guy, whoever he was, is like angel devil. The devils were all down there. And then the angel's like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Yep.
It's brilliant. Well, you know, I think that, you know, in a perfect world, where would you like to see yourself, you know, in the next, I don't know, year? I mean, what do you see for yourself?
I'm continuing to try to sell shows that I've created, and I want to, you know, I'm wrapping up working on a really big game show right now, and it's inspiring to try to get other shows made like this. I'm working on a game show now called Beachazam, and it's like it's a huge, huge Fox show, and it's hosted by Jamie Foxx, and it's just hundreds and hundreds of people on the crew. It's really cool to be part of this sort of experience. So I'm learning how to, you know, continue to produce shows and continue to do stuff. So it's like I want to do my own shows and, you know, keep doing stand-up because stand-up's fun.
You are an amazing inspiration. And I love you're so humble. And I want everyone to find out where to find you. So what is like a website or someplace that they can see where you're touring and where we can see some of the shows you're producing?
All my social media is pretty much at the Chris Army, THECHRISARMY, and that's usually Facebook and, you know, all that other stuff. I don't have I put tour dates on there. And if you want to check out the podcast, you can find it at heroinhas.com, and it's super fun.
Well, I am definitely going to tune in. Remy and I were just talking about how we want to listen more podcasts. So we're definitely going to be tuning in the next couple of days. But I want to thank you for getting up early. And it was really, really awesome to talk to you. And just keep making people laugh. God knows that we need a lot of that these days. So thanks again. And really best wishes to you. And I I know that the listeners out there are going to be incredibly inspired and check him out. That's J. Chris Newberg. Thanks again for being a guest, and we'll talk to everybody next week.